The subject of this tape is nutrition and its relation to energy. Energy is a primary function of our bodies. It might be called, use a fancy term, teleological function. That is a purposeful function of our bodies, is to produce energy. And with that, we do everything else. All the body functions depend on energy. I tell people it's like a car with power windows, power brakes, power door locks, power steering. And if the power goes, everything goes. And that's how our bodies are. Energy is a primary and common denominator of health. When the energy goes down, you're open to all kinds of illnesses. And in fact, low energy or fatigue is the basis for all illness. So energy is produced in a number of ways in the body. And I'm going to go through that, and then we'll go through some other topics. There is an energy pathway in the body. It is similar to the sort of the fuel system, like a car has a fuel tank and a fuel filter and a fuel line. Well, the body has steps that it uses to generate energy from the food we eat. And these steps are things like digestion, first chewing of the food, digesting it, absorbing it. It goes to the liver. From the liver, it's often changed into different forms. Then it goes into the cells, has to go through the cell walls, and then it goes to the mitochondria of the cells. And then once in the mitochondria, it has to go through the energy cycles that are called the Krebs cycle and glycolysis cycles in order to form ATP, which is the final form in which it's a molecule, it's a high-energy molecule that is used for fuel in the body by all cells. Now, that process requires many nutrients, and that's the relationship to nutrition. Some of it does not, like chewing. Chewing is a mechanical process, and that's a lifestyle or eating habit issue. But once it's in your stomach, for example, digestion requires many nutrients. Zinc is required for enzymes, digestive enzymes. And when zinc is low, there are not enough digestive enzymes made, and one's ability to digest decreases dramatically. Sodium chloride is exchanged to form hydrochloric acid in the stomach. People who have low sodium and low potassium on their hair analysis often have low hydrochloric acid in their stomach. And by the way, when I say a zinc deficiency is associated with low enzyme production, high copper is very similar in its effects because copper and zinc are antagonists. Absorption of nutrients requires, well, the main thing is an intact digestive system, which again is dependent on many nutrients indirectly because many people have what's called leaky gut syndrome, and they don't absorb properly, or they absorb too much. They absorb large protein molecules that cause allergic reactions. But absorption is very important. Then the food must go to the liver, where, again, many nutrients are involved in breaking down substances like peptides into amino acids and then synthesizing them once again into proteins that the body can use. Zinc, once again, plays a very important role in RNA transferase and other transcriptase enzymes needed to synthesize various compounds. These nutrients must go to the cells and must be absorbed. Well, the level of calcium and magnesium has something to do with cell permeability. So does fatty acid metabolism. And so we find that when that's off, then cells can be either too permeable or they can be not permeable enough. And this can affect nutrition greatly. As a general principle on a mineral analysis, when the calcium and magnesium levels are high, cell permeability is decreased. Calcium, in particular, stabilizes cell membranes. But cell membranes are complex, and there's something called the sodium pump, which keeps the levels of sodium and potassium correct. and they contain a lot of phospholipids and fatty acids, and these are important for cell membrane function. Once inside the cells, these nutrients are needed in the energy cycles, and again, many nutrients are involved there. For example, copper and iron are involved in the electron transport system, which is where most energy is generated. Actually, it's the end of the Krebs cycle or citric acid cycle. Also, manganese is required. Many vitamins are required, B1, B3. This is where these vitamins are used, is in these energy cycles. So if these nutrients are not present, then it's like an assembly line, except that somewhere along the line you missed something, and it will affect the energy output, any impairment of the energy pathway. There's another aspect to energy that's very important, and that is the oxidation rate. And that is like the tune of an engine, or the sort of an RPM of an engine. And those familiar with engines, you know that there's an optimum rate at which the engine runs, where it generates the most power. And the body is not unlike that. Actually, it's an example is if you pedal a bicycle too slow or too fast, you will not generate maximum power. The energy efficiency will drop. And this is related to what we call the oxidation rate, which is something that's read from a mineral analysis. But it's the idea that if certain reactions take place too quickly or too slowly, the efficiency of energy production decreases, and decreases a lot. And so that's another thing that can be read from a mineral analysis. Whenever the oxidation rate is too slow or too fast, the efficiency of energy, like pedaling the bicycle at the wrong speed, is affected. That's another very important aspect of energy. And those two together, the energy pathway and the oxidation rate, allow us to do an energy analysis of a person from a tissue mineral test. This is very important because sometimes people think they have lots of energy, for example. They run around a lot, but they don't. They're running on nervous energy. They use stimulants to keep going. They worry a lot, something like that. They don't really have good energy. And it shows up on the test often that they don't really have good energy. And it can also teach us what we need to do to correct the energy pathway and the oxidation rate. Now, there is a third aspect related to this, and that is the effect of toxic metals in particular, but toxic substances in general. Toxic metals replace the vital minerals in the various steps in the energy pathway. That's what happens to us when we become deficient. The body always tries to keep us going. So, for example, if zinc becomes deficient, the body grabs whatever it can in the environment to replace the zinc that might work a little bit. It's sort of like a replacement part on a car. It's not the right part, but it'll work a little bit or for a little while. And for zinc, it's usually cadmium, for example. Copper will replace zinc in many cases. Mercury, and others, lead, can replace calcium, for example. And so these elements get in there, and again, they are like the wrong parts in a car engine, and you get enough of them, and it just doesn't work, or it doesn't work very well, let's put it that way. You know, cadmium might substitute for zinc, and in 15% of the reactions, or 15% of the time, might work fine. The rest of the time, it doesn't. Cadmium, by the way, is found right underneath zinc, in the periodic table of the elements. And so it is similar in structure. So toxic metals impair a person's energy, and they're a very important factor. This is why, for example, if you just take a zinc tablet or a B-complex tablet, your energy system doesn't get immediately fixed. The reason for this is, it's not just that you're deficient in zinc, it's that you have replaced all that zinc with cadmium and copper and who knows what else, for years. And so the entire system is working on toxic metals. And this is not an exaggeration. You may get the idea, oh, we can just get those out. No, it's not so easy. You're dependent on them. Your system is based on them. It would be like saying, another analogy that I use is if you if you had a house and some of the bricks got bad over the years, and you, instead of replacing them correct with the correct brick, you put Coke bottles and pieces of cardboard in the walls. When it came time to fix that, you couldn't fix it all at once because the house would fall down. And the same is true of your body. You can't fix this all at once, and as a matter of fact, it's not easy to fix it. This is one reason that I've been very impressed lately with the use of sauna therapy, because it can help speed up the replacement of toxic metals with what we call more preferred minerals. The fact is, the toxins are layered in there, and there's layer upon layer upon layer, and they cannot be replaced at once. And anyone who says you can just go on a detox program for a month or 6 months or even a year is not telling you the truth. It doesn't work that way. You can get some out, but you will not get a lot of them out. It just takes longer than that to replace. It's a slow process. It has to be done piece by piece, little by little. And that's a big cause of energy problems. Matter of fact, I'd say that's the main one. There are other things we're going to talk about, like lifestyle, but toxic metals replacing vital minerals in the enzyme binding sites just impairs the pathway of where the energy is produced. Okay, those are some main components of the energy system of the body and how they relate to nutrition. And they really do. We're basically talking nutrition. Now, I know that most people, when they talk of nutrition, they're talking about what you eat. But actually, nutrition is all these elements which are found in food, which are required to produce energy. Now, diet and food does make a huge difference because, well, there's a number of things. First of all, it's where we get the nutrients. And also, there are many foods that turn out to be what we would call energy wasters. So let's talk about food. There was research done by Dr. George Watson on what he called the oxidation types. He coined that phrase. And he found that certain foods were beneficial for certain people and other foods were harmful for them. And he found that, for example, fast oxidizers needed more fat in their diet. They burned fat very well. They did not do well on carbohydrates. In fact, carbohydrates speed up the oxidation rate, which is to say they throw the system more out of balance and they impair energy production and energy efficiency decreases. For those people, fat improves their metabolic rate. They burn fat well, particularly animal fat, and it works very well for them. Slow metabolizers, a different story. They don't do as well on fat. They need some carbohydrates. They also need protein with every meal. So the type of food we eat also affects our energy system. Some people notice this because certain foods they eat, for example, slow oxidizers eat a lot of fat, they'll often just feel sluggish and sleepy afterwards. And fast oxidizers who don't eat fat often get what we call Chinese restaurant syndrome. That's where they are starving 2 hours after they eat because they basically burned up the fat, that if whatever they got in that meal and everything else, and they're hungry. Their blood sugar drops. So there are differences in diet depending on metabolic rates and things like that. And if those are respected, this can have a great impact on energy. Another aspect that we'll put under diet, but it's a general aspect of energy, is maintaining one's blood sugar. The blood sugar level is very important, especially for brain function, but actually for everything. And it's sort of like the fuel supply. Does it maintain steady fuel supply, or is the fuel supply going up and down during the day? Because when it goes down, the system doesn't produce energy correctly, and you can become very exhausted, irritable, anxious, confused, and certainly it affects energy. And this is dependent on a number of factors. It is dependent on what you eat. Certain foods like sugars do not require digestion, so the sugars are absorbed rapidly. Blood sugar rises rapidly. The body then is forced to produce a lot of insulin to lower that sugar. And often the body overproduces after a while, and you end up on this blood sugar roller coaster where you know people have a sugary breakfast, then their sugar rises, they produce a lot of insulin, the blood sugar begins to drop, and then about 10:30 in the morning it may drop too low and they need a snack, or they start getting really tired, then they have something sugary again, fruit or coffee with sugar. Coffee alone will stimulate the adrenals, by the way, and raise blood sugar. And it goes up, and then by lunchtime it's down again, and they need something sweet or more coffee. And it goes through the day that way. And sometimes they need alcohol, because that will raise your blood sugar temporarily. And that wears out the entire system. Alcohol depletes zinc and magnesium. The blood sugar system requires manganese, zinc, chromium, B vitamins. And if these things are continually being stressed, you use up more of them. And this can go on for years and years. I would say most people live on that blood sugar roller coaster because of their diet. They'll have something sweet in the morning, even if it's orange juice, by the way. And then they'll go through the day, and then they'll need a snack at mid-morning, say a piece of fruit or juice or Coca-Cola. And then it's time for lunch. And so it's up and down with the blood sugar. Keeping your blood sugar nice and even and steady is excellent for energy, and to keep the energy system working properly. That has a lot to do with the diet for the oxidation type. The fast oxidizers burn their food quickly. They need higher fat foods because they provide calories, more calories. Fat provides over twice as much calories. Those folks need it. It's like putting a hardwood log on a fire. It burns hot and evenly for a couple hours. Whereas if they eat sugar, that's like pouring gasoline on the fire. It flares up, but then it goes out. And this affects their energy tremendously. So regulating the blood sugar, which has to do with the adrenal glands, has to do with manganese, zinc, chromium, oxidation rate, vitamins are needed, B vitamins particularly, vitamin C, are needed in the energy system, is very important also for energy. By the way, other vitamins are very important, like vitamin E, the antioxidant vitamins, which is A, C, E, are particularly important for preserving the enzymes in the energy system. They're sort of like, it's a little far-fetched analogy, but you say they're like lubricants. They keep things from wearing out. They preserve them. They protect them from damage. And in that sense, they're like oil in the engine. And so those vitamins are very important as well. So you can see there's quite a range of nutrients. And that's why the quality of the diet is another aspect. Not just the type of food, but the general quality. And the general quality of diets today is so poor that many people are not getting vitamin A. Vitamin A deficiency is extremely common. And vitamin A is needed for mucous membranes. Well, your intestinal wall is a mucous membrane. And your entire digestive tract is that. Vitamin E, found in nuts and seeds, whole grains, often deficient, especially if you eat vegetable oils. They've removed the vitamin E, except for olive oil. And so if you eat these oils, corn oil, soy oil, safflower, sunflower, peanut oil, soy oil, you actually become deficient in vitamin E. These are very important. So the quality of the diet is extremely important today, because otherwise you don't get the minerals, you don't get the vitamins, you don't replenish these things, and the body takes up the toxic nutrients instead and replaces the preferred elements, and slowly your energy system gets poisoned. Now, in the area of diet, there are other things that can impair energy. I would call them energy wasters, but they're things that can get in the way. For example, eating foods you're allergic to. This just makes the whole energy system work harder, because your body has to produce histamines and other chemicals to neutralize the allergic reaction. And people often find that if you eat the foods they're allergic to, they get really tired. And that's because the allergic reactions are taking up all their energy. By the way, allergies in general, you know, even if you're allergic to, I don't know, dust or mold or something, people will notice when they're having these allergic reactions, they feel really tired. Well, that's because so much energy is being used up dealing with the allergies. But food allergies are extremely common. The most common, I would say, are wheat, and that includes spelt. Gluten is not that uncommon. That includes rye, barley, and oats. And then cow's milk dairy products. Those are probably the most common two, wheat products and possibly gluten, and then also cow's milk dairy. People may be allergic to other things. Soy is another very common one, and most soy products are junk today. The soy protein, it's an isolated product produced with chemicals and other things. And so allergic foods can be a problem, and if someone notices they're allergic to something, you should stop eating that food, at least for the time being. Sometimes taking digestive enzymes will help to handle the food, but that's not helping the energy any at all. Another problem with food is toxins of various kinds that are in our foods. Now, there's two main categories of these. One would be natural toxins, which do appear in all foods. They have certain chemicals. And this accounts for some food allergies, is not. Our bodies have a million years of experience with these food toxins, and so we can generally handle them. And by the way, there's really three categories. One would be naturally occurring toxins that are naturally in a food. Foods all make their little pesticides and little things to help them survive, and so these do exist in foods. But our bodies, by and large, can handle these. Otherwise, the food would not be eaten. In other words, foods that were high in toxins wouldn't be foods, by definition. Civilizations would have weeded them out. They might be herbs or something else, but they're not regular foods. Now, then we have foods that have become toxic for whatever reason. For example, shellfish and tuna fish are often high in mercury today. And so what used to be a good food is not a good food anymore because it's full of toxic substances. Some of them are high in PCBs and other things. And these foods are best avoided because they will make you tired and sick because of the toxins they contain. But again, the body must expend energy to deal with the toxins. And this can get to a certain point where you just feel awful after eating these things. And it's due to the toxic substance in the food. Another thing that can be in food is bacteria, a spoiled food in particular, but actually in anything. A lot of chicken these days has bacteria in it, certain other foods, for example, peanuts can be moldy with this aflatoxin, a very deadly mold. You don't want any of it in your system, and so I generally recommend staying away from peanuts and peanut butter simply because it's not so easy. The companies do get rid of most, make sure they aren't allowed to sell it with aflatoxin in it, but it's very hard to get rid of all of it. Fruit juices, they can often be moldy, especially if they sit around for a while, even if they're pasteurized. Fruit juices, by the way, can be very high in fluoride these days. Matter of fact, a lot of foods can be, but fruit and fruit juices and anything processed with water, because fluoride has found its way into the food chain, and it is quite a toxic chemical. And it's sadly being added to the water supplies, and then it gets into the food chain. So some of this is certainly man-made. Some of it is natural. There can be water that's naturally high in fluoride, and if you grow your food on that, or soil that's high in lead or something, you can get food that's toxic. Or more commonly today, it's due to the chemicals that are contaminants where the food is grown or raised, in the case of the fish. Pesticides, also pesticide residues get into our food, and those too are highly toxic chemicals, and they will impair your energy system because the body has to deal with them. And of course, some of them are specifically toxic to enzyme systems in the body. Fluoride, another one that's very toxic is chlorine, and this is put in the drinking water. So chlorinated water is not a healthy product. It may kill the bacteria very nicely, but it will impair your energy system. So that's another class of toxic substances in food. And then the third would be what I call food additives and things that have to do with food processing. And that's there are about 3,000 additives that can be added to our food. And these are your familiar colors, flavors, mold retardants, dough conditioners, preservatives. There's a whole bunch of them, and you see them on labels of food. And these two, many of them are toxic. Some of them are quite toxic, but they manage to slip by because they figure, well, you're not eating very much of it and all this kind of thing. They don't realize that they test them one by one. But in a particular meal, or even in a particular food, but definitely in a meal, you could be eating 30 or 50 of these things. Diet soda, I believe, has about 70 chemicals in it, which they don't require them to list on the label. So toxic substances can be naturally occurring. They can be things that are in the food or water, in the soil or in the water where the animal or vegetable is grown, or they can be specific man-made substances added to our foods that make the foods toxic. Another very important one is the bleach used in white flour. You know, flour is not white. They make it white, and they use the same bleach that's used in your clothing, chlorine bleach. And this, again, is very toxic, especially when you bake it. And so it ends up with a toxic bread, and then people wonder why they're tired. Well, you know, that's the reason. You're ingesting these poisons, and your body has to deal with them. So food poisons of various kinds is a very important reason for low energy. By the way, eating takes up a lot of energy anyway, digesting. This is why many cultures wisely suggest that you take a siesta or a rest after meals. Eating too much definitely uses up a lot of energy and is one of the main reasons some people are tired a lot, is they eat too much. They eat a lot, and they're spending their whole day digesting food. And one of the ways that's acknowledged in medical science to extend the life, for example, of rats, is they cut their calories down by up to 40%, by the way. In other words, compared to if you just let the animal eat whatever it wants to, you can reduce the number of calories up to 40%, and the rats can live, you know, up, you know, 1.5 times or even a little more in some species than they would otherwise. Well, I think a lot of that is because a lot of energy is used by digestion. And Americans eating poor quality food, they may feel like eating more just to get their nutrients. You know, they want to eat more, or it's just a pastime, and we end up eating too much, and this also causes fatigue for many people. Eating too often can do the same thing, because it's, again, it's using your digestive system. So I don't recommend a lot of snacking. If you need a snack until your blood sugar stabilizes, that's fine. But it's really better, unless you have blood sugar problems, not to snack between meals. It's better to sit down, have regular meals. Also, if your eating habits are poor, you won't get the good out of your food. And what happens there is the food turns to poison. Actually, that's the fourth category, I suppose, of food poisons. You know, there's all the stuff that... There's the naturally, the stuff in the water and the air. There's the additives added to the food. And then there's the poisons generated when you don't digest your foods properly. This happens for several reasons. Sometimes it is lifestyle. It's eating on the run, eating in the car, not taking enough time for meals, bolting your food, eating too fast. Or you simply don't have digestive enzymes. You're low in hydrochloric acid or other enzymes, so you don't digest your food. Well, when you don't digest your food, it either ferments in there or it rots. Your intestinal tract is a wonderful location at 98.6 degrees for rotting or fermenting of foods. This causes gas and bloating. That's usually how you know about it. It can also cause a heartburn and upset stomach and stomach pain. And what's worst, and those things are not too bad really, compared to the fact that the process of rotting and fermenting produce poisons. And those poisons poison the energy system. Fermenting causes the formation of alcohol and acetaldehyde, for example. Both of those are toxic, very toxic, to your energy system. And so anytime something ferments inside of you, and it's sugars or carbohydrates generally, then you end up with those chemicals in there, so you've created toxic substances. Rotting produces a whole bunch of toxic substances. They have names like Indol and Skatol and Cadaverine. And again, they're very toxic to the intestinal tract, to the but more so to the cellular energy system. So if you're not digesting your food correctly, you're producing toxins as well. And by the way, this is a very important source of toxins that nobody pays attention to. I noticed at one point I took an acidophilus product. It's very powerful. I highly recommend it, called L-Plantarum. I had taken many others and they hadn't done too much, but when I took this one, it turns out, digests protein. It's Lactobacillus plantarum. It digests protein. So when you get this in your system, it's like having protein enzymes, digesting enzymes there all the time. And I noticed that after a few weeks, my energy level took a jump. Most likely, what had happened when I took this Lactobacillus plantarum is that two possibilities. One is it digested my food better, and I did experience other bowel symptoms, as though things were changing in there. And by digesting the food better, I produced fewer toxins in the intestine, which were affecting my energy negatively, let's say. And so this could lead to a rise in energy. And I hear this from many people. It doesn't require necessarily taking Lactobacillus plantarum. It can require simply changing your diet, getting rid of foods that you can't digest, foods that you're allergic to, or taking digestive enzymes of some kind or hydrochloric acid to improve your digestion. Now, the other possibility is there was something else in my intestines that was generating toxins. Common ones are Candida albicans, or yeast, common yeast, which generates alcohol and acetaldehyde. And there are many other bacterial, many people have intestinal infections that are generating toxins. And this substance, which is quite potent, was able to overcome that. And that led to the elimination of toxin generation, and my energy increased. So that's another aspect of food. But the amount and how often you eat, these are also very important in addition to allergic foods and the food toxins and eating the correct foods for your metabolic type. Okay, let's talk about some other factors in energy and some other concepts. First of all, lifestyle is a very obvious one, but often overlooked. Many people don't sleep enough. I mean, that may sound obvious, but it's not to many people. There are very many excuses for it. Sometimes people are too busy. They say they're too busy. I mean, you know, it's a choice. I believe everything is a choice in life. Sometimes people have poor energy, and so they find that sleeping more doesn't help them because they're not eating better. In other words, because sleep alone won't do it. You got to replace the minerals, get rid of the toxic metals, improve your diet. And so what happens is people try sleeping more, and they find, oh, I'm just as tired. So then they decide, well, I guess it doesn't matter. So then they only sleep 6 hours or 5 hours or even seven when they really need 10. And they just go on their way, using alarm clocks to wake up, stimulants to keep going, and so forth. Well, it does catch up to you, and sleep is very, very important. You regenerate during rest, during sleep. The toxic metals are eliminated, the nutrients are absorbed. A lot of this process goes on while you sleep. So sleep and rest are very important. So I would say that's an essential. Other things that waste energy in lifestyle in area are things like tension. Now, this can be mental tension, for example, having a lot of financial stress or family stuff going on. Any kind of stress will waste energy or use up energy, let's say. It can also be muscle tension. Many people are holding a lot of tension. Certainly chiropractors and physical therapists and massage therapists know this. And the reason people feel so much better often after a massage or a treatment is because they release tension, and that's using up energy. It would be sort of like having, you know, your one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake in your car and running the engine like that all the time. I mean, it's using up a lot of energy, and you're not getting anywhere. And that's what muscle tension does.
It uses up a lot of energy, and you don't get anywhere. You don't get anything out of it. Bad posture, for example, can require muscle tension just to hold you up. And many people have terrible posture, and the only thing that's holding them up is a whole bunch of tense muscles. Structural problems in other ways are also using up a lot of energy because they're requiring a lot of muscle strength and energy to just hold the person up or to walk or to get through the day. There are many other types of stress. Being around the wrong people will do it. The wrong kind of job and work can do it. Some people know this, that, you know, if you enjoy what you're doing, often you're sort of energized by it. And if you don't like what you're doing, it can sort of shut down your energy, because there are mental aspects and what I'd call spiritual aspects to energy. And these can be very important. I've found a lot of people who are, well, they're very depressed because they're in the wrong job or the wrong relationship sometimes, and their energy is depleted. Now, there could be many reasons for that. One could be that they're trying too hard to make it right, so to speak. For example, if you're the only one in the office doing any work and everybody else is sort of a lazy, good-for-nothing, you know, well, usually you're going to be overworking. You're going to be doing more than your share to make up for all those people. A lot of people go to work and they do more than their share because their boss doesn't want to do very much, something like that. There are also people who, because of the nature of the job or because of their nature, they overdo at work just to try to be good, you know, to try to do a good job. But it doesn't work. That won't work. Ultimately, that won't work. If you're overdoing and you're just spending too much of your life substance, eventually it's going to catch up to you. And it's very important to learn how to work, just like it's important to learn how to interact with people and how to interact with the world. There are people who worry about the world and they listen to the news all day, or even if they don't listen, they think about it, and they use up all their energy. And so these things can be draining your energy. It's a very good exercise. Whatever your habits are, the exercise would be do something different. Like if you're in the habit of watching the news on television, or even watching television, frankly, go without it for a while. Go without the newspaper. If you're used to being around certain people, take a vacation or be away from those people and see what happens. It's very important to evaluate these things, because these are often patterns. I used to find around my family I would become very tired, and I didn't have a clue. It took a while of it happening, about 10,000 times, no, at least 100 times, before I began to understand that my whole psychology changed when I was around my family, and most of ours does, and we often regress, and we often try to please, and we go into a different mode of action. And it's very draining to the energy system of the body. So all these factors have become important. Other lifestyle factors would be things like breathing. Oxygen is very important for the energy system. We burn oxygen, and a lot of people don't breathe correctly. Many people live in areas where there's low oxygen. These are cities, especially large cities with a lot of cars and stagnant air. You know, some of them, even though there are cars and big cities, the wind currents keep the pollution down and that kind of thing. But where there's pollution, there can be low oxygen content, and then many people feel tired. I know I do in some of those cities, because I'm not getting proper oxygenation of my tissues. Now, there are therapies you can do. There's ozone therapy, there's oxygen, there's hyperbaric oxygen, things like this to help this, and that's fine. But if you're chronically breathing low oxygen, then it will affect your energy system and your entire health. Another reason for low oxygen is poor breathing, and this is extremely common, shallow breathing. And so part of lifestyle is learning to breathe deeply, to relax and breathe deeply. As a general rule, when we're tense, we don't breathe deeply. I notice it in myself. Some people have this tendency more than others. Some people smoke cigarettes because it helps them to breathe deeply. They have to. They feel like inhaling, even though, sadly, it's an irritant. And that's part of the draw of the cigarette. But learning to breathe deeply has a lot to do with your energy. And one of the reasons people yawn, of course, is they're taking in more oxygen. That's what a yawn is. And it is a remedy for fatigue. Hydration of the body is another one. Water is required for all body functions, and while it's popular now to drink more, and some people are drinking too much, I would say, a lot of people do not drink, especially the ones who are on the go and too much of a bother, don't want to go to the bathroom, don't want to get up at night kind of thing. And then they wonder why their energy is low. Well, the water is required, particularly good quality water. My preferred water is spring water or distilled. Spring or distilled. Spring, actually better. Good quality spring water. The drinking water in reverse osmosis, you don't know when those filters were cleaned, so you're not sure what you're getting, and I think it does more damage to the water than the spring or distilled water. But the type of water matters, and some people notice that they feel more energized drinking different kinds of water. And certainly drinking enough water is important. You don't have to flood yourself necessarily, but say 6 glasses of water a day is important. So these are other factors that I would say lifestyle factors that certainly affect energy. Another factor is infections. And I'm learning this through sauna therapy on myself and on my clients that everybody is carrying at least half a dozen, and probably more like a dozen, chronic infections. These can be from early childhood. They are often things that were treated with antibiotics. Years ago, the antibiotics killed off the bugs, but they didn't get rid of the bad tissue. And so a little bit of chronic infection often remains or develops later. And common sites for these are the sinuses. That's an extremely common site. People say they've got post-nasal drip, they've got a little allergies, that sort of thing. Well, often there's a chronic, very chronic sinus infection in there because the sinuses are very hard. They don't have a good blood supply, and it's hard to get antibiotics and other things in there to even deal with them that way. You can irrigate your sinuses, but it's a very common one. Other ones are teeth, very common to have chronic little infections, cavitations, and other problems in the jaws and the teeth. Ears, very common, again, left over from childhood. Eyes, very common, especially swimming in chlorinated swimming pools and other things. You can pick up little infections in hot tubs and swimming pools and things. Bronchioles are very, very common. You know, when you get your tonsils taken out because you've been getting tonsillitis and sore throats, well, those are infections, and getting rid of the tonsils doesn't get rid of the infections tendency. It just gets rid of the lymph tissue that was dealing with them. Lungs, again, very common. Bladder infections, intestinal infections. These things are rampant. Skin infections. These things all zap your energy because they require energy. The body is sitting there fighting them. And if we can get rid of them once and for all, and the only way to do that is to remove the tissue, the bad tissue, and to make those and to increase the body's energy so it can really fight them off once and for all. This helps energy also. During sauna therapy, I went through my old childhood asthma. I went back through hepatitis, even though I thought I had gotten rid of it. I went through eye infections and teeth infections and bronchial infections and so forth. And I was very surprised because I was in, quote, good health when I started the program. And I find this with everybody. Okay, so infections are important, chronic infections, and they're not that easy to deal with. It is a reason, by the way, that many people do feel better taking antibacterial substances. And I don't necessarily mean antibiotics, although they're used on more and more illnesses today, ulcers and artery disease. They're finding it's all related to infection. But even the antibacterial things like grapefruit seed extract and vitamin C people use, or herbs like echinacea. Now, one of the principles here that's very important is that all these toxins and infections and toxic metals, they are adaptations to stress. They are adaptations to stress. And the principle is that all adaptations use up energy. And so anytime your body is adapting, it is using up energy. I mean, if the climate is too cold and you're shivering, that you may keep yourself warm, but you're using up energy. If you're having to substitute toxic metals for the preferred ones, well, that's an adaptation. It's a compensation, and it uses up energy. If your spine is out of alignment, and so you're walking crooked, and you're having to compensate by holding parts of your body at different levels or heights or whatever, that's an adaptation. It's using up energy. If you're actually, a lot of our mental stuff is adaptations. For example, if you're afraid, but you don't want to deal with your fear, so you're compensating for your fear, and there are many ways to compensate for your fear. You might be distracting yourself. You might be, you might have a huge dog around the house to protect you, but not because you love dogs, but because you're afraid. Well, you're compensating for the fear, and that's an adaptation, and will tend to use up energy. So we often adapt. Sometimes you can compensate for feelings like anger, and the feeling may be unacceptable, and so you run around being very sweet to everybody and taking courses on love and attending peace marches and things like that. But if you're doing it because you're compensating for your feelings of anger, which is most common, by the way, you'll use up a lot of energy because it's an adaptation. It's not the same thing as being like Jesus, you know, who was into love and everything, but he wasn't compensating for anything. And he didn't need to run around and do something to compensate for his emotions. But many, many times we do that with our emotions, we do it with our structure, we do it with our body chemistry, and so forth. And so it's always good to look at your life and what you're doing and how you're spending your time and to ask how much, if anything, that you're doing is a compensation or an adaptation to something that isn't natural or isn't working for you. I mean, certainly it happens in relationships. The relationship isn't very good, so the people compensate. Well, how do they compensate? Well, they might drink a lot of beer. They might spend a lot of time away from home because they don't want to be with their kids or their, you know, spouse. They might listen to a lot of music in their room because they don't want to talk to other people. In other words, it's not that they love music and it's not that they love running around, but they're compensating. That's using up a lot of energy. And it's wise to look at that kind of thing. Because many people, I find, settle. They settle for a kind of a, I won't say a rotten life, how about a mediocre life? They don't live where they want to live. They don't, they're not with the people they want to be with. They spend their time in smoky bars instead of in other places because that's where their friends want to go, for example. They compromise a lot. And the more you compromise your system, you're adapting or compensating and you're using up a lot of energy. So it's wise to look at that. That's a very big cause. They settle for a job that they don't really like. On and on and on. There are many levels of this. So remember, every adaptation uses up energy. Really what we do in healing is we get rid of the adaptations. We get rid of the compensation or the need for them, and the energy returns. And that's biochemically, structurally, diet, and so forth. You know, for example, in diet, the fast food, they compensate for the fact that the food is no good by putting a lot of salt on it. Or people compensate for that. They're eating tasteless food because it's refined food or it's not cooked properly. And so then they compensate for that by putting a lot of chili sauce on it or salt or sugar. Well, besides the toxic effects of the condiments, it's a compensation. It's not the way to do it. It's not the ideal way. And it's worth getting back to the better way and your energy will return. Okay, another concept that I want to go into is stimulation versus nourishment, because it's very important in the area of energy. What we do when our energy gets low often is we stimulate ourselves. And if we're not careful, we can think that we're not stimulating, we're nourishing ourselves. Both of those will increase your energy temporarily, but nourishing tends to increase it in the long term. Stimulation increases it in the short term, and the effects, the long-term effects of all stimulants is the opposite. It runs down your energy. It weakens you. An obvious one might be, say, if you're tired, you could take some cocaine or some amphetamines, speed. That's what the college students all do, right? And if you've ever tried anything like that, I mean, coffee will do the same thing if you take enough. Caffeine is a stimulant. It will give you energy, but over time, especially if it's abused, one cup of coffee may not do it. But people who are drinking 3-4 cups, or certainly using the drugs, they basically whip their body. A stimulant is like whipping a horse. The horse will go, but the horse doesn't like it. And the long-term effect of stimulants is to make your energy worse. That's very important because so many people use stimulants. Just witness the popularity of Starbucks and all the coffee chains and of course the use of drugs and the use of caffeine, you know, the soda pop, the Pepsi generation. And there's a lot of confusion about that because unless you stop and think about it, many people actually believe that these things are good for them and they're feeling better because they've had their morning cup of coffee kind of thing. They're not really realizing that No, not exactly. Now again, if you're careful with things, it's just like alcohol. A little bit of alcohol is not gonna, you know, destroy you. It's when you don't realize that it's not really so great and it's you're abusing it. But the use of stimulants is very common, and stimulants give the appearance of energy. Now, if you really have good energy, usually you do not want stimulants. By the way, I don't know if you've experimented with this, but if you're feeling very full of energy, which many people today, by the way, are born low in energy, they've never experienced good energy. We call this burnout babies. This actually sounds very sad, but it's quite common. The reason for this is the mothers, particularly, but the mothers and fathers were not healthy, and so the baby is born with toxic metals in these enzyme binding sites instead of the right metals. And I see that all the time on the hair mineral test, that the young children at age 1 are full of toxic metals. So their energy system doesn't work from day 1, doesn't work quite right. Often these children have little chronic ear infections and other problems, trouble in school, so forth, getting sick a lot, whatever it is, behavior problems. And they never know what it's like to experience good energy. But anyway, if you're feeling very good and you take a stimulant, usually you won't feel good. It'll feel unnatural. It'll feel hyped up when you if you were to take a substance like that. And so many of the people who use either drugs that are stimulants or caffeine, they are tired. And they feel normal when they use the stimulant, but the alternative would be to fix their system or to nourish them. So the idea of stimulation versus nourishment is another thing that you should always look at in your life. For example, if something gives you energy, you should ask yourself, well, am I stimulating myself or am I nourishing myself? And it's sometimes not an easy thing. Caffeine is pretty easy. It doesn't have any food value. It's a stimulant. But how about if it's a mental stimulant? You know, for example, a deadline. You've heard people who say, well, I can't work except on a deadline. Well, often that's because the stress stimulates them into action, where if they don't have a deadline, they just want to lie around, and that's what they do. They just don't get very much done. So many people choose, for example, a job, and I've noticed this, that a lot of people, they like the fact that they have to be at work at 8 o'clock. They may complain and whine about it, but that's the only way they'd get up. Otherwise, they wouldn't get up. They don't have any energy, so they would lie in bed half the day. They like the discipline that is forced on them because it actually acts as a stimulant. And it's not a totally bad one either because it might get them to eat and take care of themselves and all that rather than just lie around. And there are nourishing aspects to work, by the way, such as giving one a purpose for getting up and accomplishing something at work. So these are good areas, but some people's work is just pure stimulation. They just overload themselves. Matter of fact, I know people who are tired, and so they purposely they accumulate too much work, too much to do, and that way they're always on the run, and it keeps them going, because if they didn't have that, they would just collapse. You can also do this with worry and fear. This can be an energy that you run on. It is a stimulant. It is not acting as a nourishment. Certainly, fear and worry are not very good nourishment, but they can stimulate you into action. Fear. Well, we better do this now because this might happen. We better do that because this might happen. And that's how they do everything in their life. Financial stress. Some people create financial stress so they can worry about it, and it drives them. And when they don't have financial stress, they wouldn't work. They wouldn't do anything. So, because they're tired, not because they're lazy. The two, by the way, are close. And by the way, and that's something that you have to learn when you rest, is that you're not being lazy, you're resting. There's a difference. There are people who are lazy, although I think most of those people are burned out. They don't have energy. Certainly the homeless people, most of them are burned out. They're exhausted. And so they have trouble holding a job. Some people choose a relationship which is full of stress. Ever wonder why people would choose certain relationships where they're getting beaten up or someone is abusive to them? Well, it can be because they need the stimulation. They're exhausted, and they respond to their adrenals respond, basically. It's an adrenal response. And they're living on the energy of stress and resentment, anger. Those things are stimulants when your energy system is not working. And so it is important in your life to look at things and ask, is this nourishing me or stimulating me? Because if it's a stimulant, it's going to wear out your energy system. That's going to be the ultimate result. If it's nourishing you, then it should feel good. A big one, by the way, is exercise. A little exercise is fine, but many people today are tired and they use exercise as a stimulant. And it is a potent stimulant, by the way. It causes the release of chemicals in the brain that give you a natural high, and people talk about it. And it causes the release of cortisone. It forces the adrenals to work. And this gives you a natural high, too. And it gets rid of pain, both physical pain and emotional pain. And so people think, well, I'm just having a good time, and isn't exercise wonderful? Well, it can be okay in moderation. And by the way, the famous Kenneth Cooper, who wrote the book Aerobics and started the heavy-duty exercise craze, has changed his mind, you should know, and now says the gentle exercise is plenty sufficient and heavy exercise is not good because it becomes a stimulant, and a stimulant wears you out. And what we're noticing today is that, well, I noticed just that hardly a month goes by that there isn't announced on the news that a famous athlete, or even just a high school athlete, keels over and dies. Perfectly wonderful health, all that kind of thing, just keels over and dies. And you have to ask yourself, what in the world's going on here? Well, one of the things that's going on is these people are not in such good shape. They look gorgeous, but they're not in good shape. And they overtrain, they overexercise. It's a stimulant. They think they're in good shape, so they keep going. Their coaches think they're in good shape, so they keep working them. And one day, their system just gives out. They have a heart attack or a stroke at 23 or something. So exercise is very tempting to use as a stimulant, first of all, because it's socially acceptable, unlike alcohol, say. Everybody thinks exercise is wonderful. And secondly, because it really does give you a high. What I tell people is you can measure this in your exercise program because you should feel good whether or not you exercise. Say go 3-4 days. If you exercise, fine, but if you don't exercise, fine. You should feel just as good. Now I want to mention two other concepts quickly in the tape remaining. One is other frequencies that our bodies require for its energy system, and one is infrared. Infrared is excellent. Now you get some by being out in the sun, and then you can also use infrared heat lamps in a kind of sauna arrangement, and this is very important for your energy system. And you will find often that your energy improves. Now, part of that is because the infrared helps the body get rid of toxins, helps circulation, and helps even the use of food. But the energy itself, other frequencies, light frequencies, are nourishment, and their nourishment through the eyes and through the skin. And so it's important to understand that we're not simply dependent on food and water and things like that. Other frequencies are also important for health. And the infrared is one that most people are missing because we've been told not to spend time in the sun. And, of course, if you spend too much time, it isn't good. But you can get it with the infrared lamps, heat lamps, the red ones. They need to be the red ones. A final idea about energy is that there are two nervous systems, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. The sympathetic nervous system is catabolic. It's called the fight or flight. It uses up energy. The parasympathetic is nurturing and nourishing and restores energy. And we need to make a balance between these two. Animals are very good at it. Just watch a dog. They can run like crazy, but then they can spend the whole afternoon resting. People are not so good, and most people I see have burned out their sympathetic system. That means they've overused it, either running around too much, or you can burn it out mentally, worry and fear and resentment and anger. That's all sympathetic too. And so anything that helps you become more parasympathetic will help conserve your energy. And by the way, conserving, you'll get more, just like with money. If you conserve, you'll get more. If you use up what you have, you'll get less. And so to make that balance is very important, and natural therapies and natural healing methods are concerned with making us parasympathetic, that is resting, relaxing, nurturing, and nourishing ourselves, and not spending as much energy, since that leads to low energy. Well, I think that covers...